أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد
وعلى محمد وعلى أهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، روحي وارواح العالمين له الفداء. رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي امري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. Brothers and sisters, if Allah gives us strength, inshallah, we're going to be talking about a very important Islamic concept, the idea of submitting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in every arena of life, defining the religion in the proper way. What happens is that for us as believers, we believe that Allah is the King of Kings. There's only one authority that we believe in and that we respect, and that's God. But that has to manifest itself in our lives. I want to address an issue which I feel is something that we want to make sure that we're not suffering from, but it's also something that we can share with others. Sometimes people will define religion for us. Or we may do it for ourselves. Sometimes we may define religion according to where we're comfortable. I'll give you an example. Some people, when they think of being Shia, they think of it as being someone who loves the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. That I love the Imams, I have reverence for the Imams, I care for the Imams, I cry for the Imams, so therefore I'm one of the Shia. Or, for instance, we'll add to that, that we recognize that the Imam has been appointed by God. We remember the day of Ghadir al-Qum, and we remember that the Imam was appointed by God. We are one of those people, so therefore, by definition, we are one of the Shia. The problem with that definition is that it includes people that you and I don't normally count as Shia. For instance, you know that Amr bin al-As has poetry about Amir al-Mu'mineen referring to Khadir, Amr bin al-As, the mastermind of Siffin. Or Ma'mun, he would be also Shia according to this definition. The same person who killed Imam al-Ridha, he's also, according to this, a Shia. He tells his story. He tells to one of his companions, he says, you know how I became Shia? Harun Ma'mun saying this. He says, I learned to be a Shia from my father. I'm a little afraid that the microphone might be too loud. I feel like the echo, is it okay? Okay. What happens is that he says that I learned to be Shia from my father. Ma'mun is saying this. I learned to be Shia from my father. How did you learn to be Shia? He says that once my father went to make Hajj and I went with him. We go to make Hajj. After the Hajj, we go to Medina. And when we go to Medina, we have a tent, official tent for the Khalifa, and we tell everybody in Medina, you cannot come to the tent. My father gives these instructions. You're not allowed to visit my tent unless you tell me your lineage, how it is that you go back, let's say, to the Muhajireen or to the Ansar or to Bani Hashim. So each individual would come. They would say that I am Fulan, the son of Fulan. They would mention their lineage, and he would give a gift. Sometimes 200 dinars, sometimes 5,000 dinars, depending on who it was. Somebody showed up at the gate, and the head of security, one of his top officials, comes to him and says, there's a man who's at the gate, at the door, and he says his name is Musa ibn Ja'far, and his lineage goes back to Ali ibn Abi Talib. When Harun heard this, he told those, Ma'mun's telling the story, he told me, my brothers were there, other senior officials were there, everybody be respectful, silent. He said, let him come in, but don't tell him not to come off of his steed. The Imam was on a donkey at that time. Don't come off the steed, come right over here to the curtain, to the carpet where I am. The Imam entered the tent and he's now on a steed. Imagine that, he's on the donkey riding and he's coming towards him. When the Imam looks at Harun al-Rashid, he tries to get down off, he says, no. Come. He comes to the edge of the carpet. Harun al-Rashid himself gets up. He walks to the edge of the carpet. He greets the Imam, kisses him on the forehead, takes him by the hand, brings him to his spot. They said that he's sitting, and actually Harun now is sitting in a lower special place than him. And now talking very warmly, the Imam is giving him advice, telling him you should look after the fuqara, this and that. So now after that, it's time for the Imam to leave. Again, he gets up, kisses the Imam. The Imam's now walking. When he's walking, he tells his sons, right, the sons of the Khalifa, walk with him. So we're walking with him, holding the steed. The Imam gets off, and he says, walk with him and go home with him. You've heard this story before. He's walking with him, we're going home. Ma'mun says, as we were walking, Imam Al-Kadhim turns to me quietly so nobody else hears. He says that you're going to be the Khalifa after your father. Be kind to my children. Ma'mun says, that's finished. He says, I was a little bolder than my brothers when it came to talking to my father. So I waited till the tent was quiet, nobody's around, and I asked my father, I said that, who was this individual that you showed so much respect to? He starts telling him, now the words of Harun al-Rashid. Harun replied, this is the words now of Harun, هذا إمام الناس. This is the Imam of the people. وَحُجَّةُ اللَّهِ عَلَىٰ خَلْقِهِ. This is Allah's hujjah on the earth. وَخَلِيفَتِهِ عَلَىٰ عِبَادِهِ. This is the Khalifa on Allah's servants. God's Khalifa on the earth. This is the person. So Ma'mun says, I asked my dad, I was like, well, aren't you the Khalifa? The words again of Harun. He said, I rule this Jama'ah. I rule these people, but that's through force. The real Khalifa, wa Imam Musa ibn Ja'far, Imamu Haqqin Wallah. He's the true Imam. Ya bunayya, innahu la ahaqqu bi maqami Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam minni wa min al-khalq jami'a. He says that I swear to God, he is more deserving of the position of the Prophet than me and the rest of creation. So this is Ma'mun saying, this is how I became Shia. Well, how do you know that he's the rightful Khalif? My dad told me. He says after that something interesting happened. Remember I said that every person who came in, they would introduce themselves, and depending on who they were, from the Ansar, from the Muhajirin, they'd give them a gift, up until 5,000 dinars. He said when it came to Imam Musa ibn Ja'far, then what we gave him was 200 dinars. He said, he told the head of security, the official there, he said, go over and tell him that, you know, I'm doing it, suffering a little bit. It's a little difficult economically. Inshallah, later, we'll take care of you. So he said, I asked my dad about this too. He said, everybody else, they're saying their leaders, who even knows if they're telling the truth? And you're giving them 5,000, 200. Why did you only give him 200? He says that this person, if they get money, they might have 100,000 people over to wage war with us. It's better to keep these people poor. So, did he not know that he was a Khalifa? 100%. Would you call Ma'mun then Shia? So, brothers and sisters, when it comes to defining, because we're trying to prepare ourselves for the 12th Imam, when it comes to defining ourselves, let's go to Quran and Sunnah and see how God says to define ourselves as Shia. How do we know if we're waiting for the 12th Imam? Is it enough that we love the Imam? We shed tears for the Imam. Is that enough? What does God say in the Quran? So this verse is Surah number 8, and it's the first verse, part of the verse. The verse is this. وَعَطِيُوا اللَّهَ وَرَسُولَهُ إِن كُنْتُم مُؤْمِنِينَ. Obey Allah. This is how we define if you're a believer or not. Obey Allah and the Prophet if you're a mu'min, if you believe. What happens if I don't obey? Well, then you're not a mu'min. Sarih from the Quran. The definition of being a follower is obedience, not love. That has to be there, of course. Ma'rifah, that has to be there. But how can I say if I'm mu'min or not? According to Quran, obedience. And we talked about this before, the idea of obedience in every single wajibat Making sure that it's not that we pick and choose when it comes to religion. I don't think I mentioned those verses themselves, because the verses are really scary. About those people who pick and choose when it comes to religion. I like these parts of Islam and I don't like those. Oh, what does God say about those people? So now, in addition to that, brothers and sisters, because we talked about the idea of a comprehensive approach to the wajibah, tonight's discussion, inshallah, we're embracing the idea that all of Islam has to be practiced. There is no picking and choosing when it comes to us elevating ourselves and getting closer to the Imam. With that in mind, the idea of embracing an entire Islamic lifestyle, then I'll also mention the idea of one of the spiritual wajibat. I started with one of the spiritual wajibat yesterday. The idea that brothers and sisters who are coming to these majalis for Imam al-Hussein, we're not only coming to be reminded about our wajibat, but we know that's the definition. Otherwise, we're not even in the arena. In addition to that, we want to elevate ourselves so we have an entire Islamic lifestyle. Our lives, for instance, in our family life, are like that of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Our spiritual lives, brothers and sisters, our emotions, we're going to make it a little difficult for ourselves. Our emotions, brothers and sisters, are supposed to be governed by God. I want to be a muwahid. I want to be somebody who is practicing Islam, believes in only one God. The Quran doesn't make it that easy, brothers and sisters, in order for us to become those elite soldiers of the Imam. For instance, one of the verses that we have in the Quran, and brothers and sisters, when I say this verse, don't think that me, Sheikh Usama, you've got it all together and you're telling us, no, we've all got to work together as a community to get there. Let's do the verse. This is one of many, but one of the concepts in the Quran. Surah 3, verse number 175. فَلَا تَخَافُوهُمْ وَخَافُونِي إِن كُنْتُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. God makes it a little bit tough. Even, not only are the actions of our bodies, the actions of the heart, the emotions are also supposed to be under the command of Allah. So what does God say in this verse? So don't fear them and fear me if you are mu'mineen. If you're a true muwahid, this is a standard for all of us, and like I'm saying, all of us as a community, we need to grow. If I'm afraid of anything other than God, there's a problem with my tawheed. I have to work on it. If I have any irrational fear about anything, the higher levels of iman, the higher levels of faith, was it just to say that Ali is the imam? No, we have a ways to go, brothers and sisters. So we're not supposed to be afraid of anything. We're not supposed to be afraid of death itself. We're not supposed to be afraid of our risk and our money. How am I going to make it? Financially, we're struggling. The business is in trouble. Right? There's a lot of mistakes that people make simply because of fear. So now I want to give one example, practical example, about the fear of death itself. Let's go again back to the words of God in the Quran. As a believer, even my emotions are supposed to be under the control of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. How does God want me to feel about death? Two verses from the Holy Quran. The first one, brothers and sisters, is Surah 4, verse number 78. أَيْنَمَا تَكُونُوا يُدْرِكُمُ الْمَوْتِ وَلَوْ كُنْتُمْ فِي بُرُجٍ مُشَيَّدًا. Wherever you are, God speaking, wherever you are, death will find you. يُدْرِكُمُ الْمَوْتِ. Even if you're in lofty towers, there is no getting safe from God. But I have fire insurance. I drive a Volvo. God can still get you. I mean, God, Allah's not a monster, but I mean, even if you're in your bathtub, God could drown you, right? I mean, he could get you. أَيْنَمَا كُنْتُمْ يُدْرِكُمُ الْمَوْتِ. Even if you're in lofty towers. What else? Let's say I'm really careful. I eat organic food, I'm healthy, I exercise. Will I live forever? If I'm supposed to die, let's say it's by accident, I'm going to get run over, for instance, by a Mack truck. What does the verse say? Surah 3, and I'm not trying to scare anybody or say that, God forbid, that God will make this happen to you, but Surah 3, verse number 154. قُلْ, Prophet instructed to tell us, لَوْ كُنْتُمْ فِي بُيُوتِكُمْ, brothers and sisters, even if you're in your homes, لَبَرَزَ الَّذِينَ كُتِبَ عَلَيْهِمُ الْقَاتْلِ إِلَى مَضَاجِعِهِمْ, those people who are supposed to die, you're supposed to die, you're supposed to be on, it's called one of these streets here, Ford, for instance. You're supposed to die there. I'm being real careful, but God has already written it. You're going to go on this street, you're going to be wiped out. He says those people, they will go, they'll end up over there. Now, what happens if I really believe these verses? I want to share one story, and then after that, one inspirational thing that I saw in a documentary in the Islamic Republic. So one story. Once, this guy, he's explaining a story. This is in the time when Imam Khomeini, may Allah have mercy on his soul, is still alive. He says the leader, at this time, he's the representative of Imam Khomeini. So he's not our leader yet. He's a representative of Imam Khomeini. He said, I didn't really know him that well. He came into the area, and he was doing like a report for Imam Khomeini on one area of the military in a place called Dehlaran. He says that when we went over in this area, we're driving in this vehicle, military vehicle, and as we're driving through the area, we go out of the area that's safe and that's controlled, we go into another area, and information gets out that the representative of Imam is in this area. He says, suddenly we see from the hillside, armored personnel vehicles moving downhill and coming at top speed towards us. The driver was in the vehicle. He says, I'm in the back, so Ayatollah Khamenei is sitting in the front, I'm in the back, and there's the head of the Revolutionary Guard in that area. He's in the back. The driver panicked. He said, we started driving like crazy. He said, Ayatollah Khamenei, he tapped the driver. The driver looked at him, upset. They're coming, they're going to get us. He ignored him, he kept driving. Started tugging him again. Pulled his arm away. They're going to get us. He said, look, if we're supposed to go, we're going to go. Either we're going to go because you drive so crazy and we'll crash, or they'll get us. Relax. The guy was nervous, upset, but he kept talking. He said he was talking to him like a father talks to a child. Look, this stuff is in God's hand. It's okay. Relax. He said, we ended up driving. He said, myself, because I didn't know him that well, I'm like, why won't he let him drive? We need to get out of here. I can see the armored vehicles closing in on us. We ended up making it out. He said, after that, we made it. We escaped. Ayatollah Khamenei went to the driver. He said, do you smoke? He's like, yeah. He said, have a cigarette. Calm down. And he went over, he recited a verse of the Holy Quran. He's like, look, these things are written. So now, the inspirational story that I want to share with you guys. Brothers and sisters, right now, there are some mu'mineen who are defending the shrine of the haram of the Lady Zainab. And they make documentaries about these individuals. Once there was a documentary about some Afghan brothers. There's a unit that they have over there, and they're defending the shrine. They talked to these different individuals, and they talked to one of them before he becomes shaheed. So they go over, they're interviewing them before it becomes shaheed. When they're talking to this person, it's really interesting. Why? Because, brothers and sisters, we can attain these levels. The guy is explaining his situation. What is he doing? Why is he there? Then he says this line. He says that God has removed all of the fear from my heart. This is just before Shahada. So brothers and sisters, it's possible to live like that. When God says, only fear me, for you and I, this is completely possible. Yes, we have to work on it. We have to work on our spirituality. We have to be on a spiritual routine. But the idea that we can live like that, completely unafraid, that's one of the levels. Yes, that's absolutely possible for us. So now, having said that, brothers and sisters, inshallah, we want to go to the story of Nabi Sulaiman. Now, in this story of Nabi Sulaiman, I want to talk about one of the spiritual wajibat. So for the higher levels of faith, for those who want to get closer to God, another one of the spiritual wajibat. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. So brother and sister, this is verse number 34. We're still in Surah Sa'd. وَلَقَدْ فَتَّنَّا سُلَيْمَانَ وَأَلْقَيْنَا عَلَىٰ كُرْسِيِّهِ جَسَدًا ثُمَّ أَنَا. I mentioned yesterday Allama Tabatabai's take on this verse. This other take on the verse was something from this team of scholars who worked on the movie Sulaiman. After that, they presented it to one of the senior ulama, and he said that the most accurate understanding is the following. So we see the translation of this verse was the following. Certainly we tried Sulaiman, and we cast a lifeless body on his throne. Thereupon he was penitent. Now, the lifeless body we discussed before, there were two possibilities. Today, the possibility that we're going to discover and then after that work on is the possibility that actually it was Nabi Sulaiman himself. He was cast on the throne. His body was like a body without a soul because he was extremely sick. And then after that, the verse says, Anab, he went back to God. He made Tawbah. What was his mistake? What was the thing that he was learning? Perhaps, it was that he hadn't been as careful about his health. Perhaps that's what it is. He went back to God. He made sure that he took care of it. So the spiritual wajib that I wanted to talk about, brothers and sisters, is the idea of actually maintaining one's health. It's one of the spiritual wajibah. We would like to go to the higher levels of irfan, to the higher levels of spirituality, get closer to God. What are the practical steps that we learn from our senior ulama in order to get there? One of the things, brothers and sisters, is the importance of taking care of our health. Let's mention some of the ahadith. One of them, because we're going to talk about Islam without apologizing, the idea of an Islamic lifestyle, embracing all of Islam. The Prophet said to us, he says, there's two blessings which are normally not appreciated. Normally, there are two blessings. Most people don't take them too seriously. It's not until they're taken away from us that we appreciate them. One of them, he says, al-amnu wal-afiyah. One of them is security. The other is health. Brothers and sisters, sometimes I was in Iraq recently. Inshallah, Allah will give all of you the opportunity to go over and perform ziyarah of Imam al-Hussein and the other a'imma in Iraq. One of the things that you discover about riding in Iraq is what it's like to be in an actual war. Luckily, we didn't see any action. Right? We're just driving past the areas. You see the places are completely destroyed. They're like, yeah, Daesh was there. And then you find out which group is running it. It's kind of exciting. When you make ziyarah like that, you're like, you know, inshallah, you know, maybe we become shaheed. Allahu a'lam. So anyhow, one of the blessings that we don't normally, the Prophet is telling us, that we don't normally pay attention to is the blessing of security. Over there, they don't have security. Imagine not knowing if you send your children to school, if they come back or not, because of explosions, because of bombs, right? The lives of people being lost. But the other thing that's not appreciated, and there's more than one hadith about this, is siha in some of the hadith, or afia. We'll call it health. One of the things that's not appreciated is that. And brothers and sisters, this is a thing we want to talk a little bit about, how to maintain this blessing. But one of them, a reminder, how to appreciate the blessing of health. One of the ways of appreciating blessings that we do have is when we see those who are less fortunate. We have a hadith that reminds us about the blessings of visiting the sick. There's a hadith where Allah will address the mu'min and he will say, how come you didn't visit me when I was sick? And the mu'min will be like, the believer will say, well, God, you don't feel pain. You don't get tired. How could I visit you when you're sick? And God said, whoever visits a believer who's sick has visited me. Right? One way of us remembering the blessing of health. But now, back to that spiritual wajibat. What do we want health for? This is another hadith. It's from the first imam. Zakatu siha as-sa'i fi ta'atillah. The zakat of being healthy is to make effort in the way of Allah, to push oneself in the way of Allah. Brothers and sisters, without us being healthy, we can't serve God properly. If we don't take care of our mental and health and physical health, how can we serve even anybody else, let alone God? So it's one of those spiritual wajibat. Now, one of the things, brothers and sisters, and the reason I decided to mention it here in a public gathering, is the idea of making this part of our Islamic lifestyle. Now, what happens is, sometimes amongst us as believers, we don't place as much importance as we should on maintaining our health, our physical health, as a community. And what happens is that the way that we're living life is just like everybody else over here. You see less that we have an active lifestyle, especially as we get older. In school, yes, alhamdulillah, they've got exercise. But as we get older, you see that we as believers, normally we don't leave such an active lifestyle. Now, before any brothers or sisters start to get Salafi on me and start to tell me that exercise is bid'ah, wa kullu bid'atin fi an-nar, instead of telling me that, we look at the lifestyle of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and we'll see that actually they lived an active lifestyle. The hadith I'm telling you is from Imam Al-Qadhim alayhi as-salam. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now what happens is, the Imam says, the person who's telling this story says that I saw the Imam and he was working in the field, dripping with sweat. And I asked the Imam, I said, where are the guys? Where are the people who should be helping you? The Hujjat of Allah, how can you be working in the field? And he said that I'm working in the field. He said, but people who are better than me and better than my father, they worked in the field. They worked with their hands. Who? He mentions the Prophet. He mentions Imam Ali. And he says, this is the way of the prophets to lead that active lifestyle. So all of the Ahlul Bayt had that active lifestyle, and the idea of us living and working simply behind a computer, for instance, driving and in air conditioning, even when we go to the mall, not walking that distance from the mall, driving and circling so that we can be close to the store, walk inside and quickly come back. This kind of a lifestyle without being out in nature, actually that's not something that Islam approves us. We have to exercise. The instructions that we get from senior ulama are that for everybody, brothers and sisters, exercise is necessary. This is from Ayatollah Khamenei himself. He says, for those of us who are older, he says, I consider it wajib. But even for those people who are younger, he says, I consider it necessary. So we'll take it in that way. For everybody and their own level, they should be exercising. Imam Khomeini, as we know, used to exercise three times a day. Take walks 3 times a day. Now, the important thing, though, when it comes to maintaining a healthy lifestyle, brothers and sisters, is it's not only exercise. Having a good relationship with our families, those people who don't have so much stress in their lives, they also end up living better and more healthily. Being out in nature is important, taking advantage of nature. Eating properly, sleeping properly, these are all things that are there as part of those spiritual wajibat. Now, what I wanted to mention also, though, brothers and sisters, and I hope I don't get in too much trouble from the sisters, is that also, when it comes to the relationship between husband and wife, one of those things that are wajib, one of the things that are wajib is maintaining the appearance. It's necessary for brothers, they should also do that. For sisters, it's among the wajibat. So for instance, if the husband would like his wife to be in shape, and I know I'll get in trouble with the sisters, but I'm going to another location. The brothers can deal with this afterwards. It's wajib to exercise. It's wajib to exercise. We said Islam with no apologies, all of Islam. Maintaining the appearance, we learn from the imams that you would see the imam, for instance, he had dyed his beard, and the companion would be surprised. Why have you dyed your beard? He says, this helps out in the relationship. It's important for me to maintain my appearance. The other parts of the family life are also important. We're told about having good akhlaq in the family, right? The Prophet of God, when he says that I am the best of you with my family, right? The best of you are the best of you with your families. I'm the best with my family, right? We have in the hadith that having good akhlaq with the family actually extends the life. Those families where they're stressed, where they're shouting, screaming, unfortunately, swearing and bad words. Those families, yeah, people die sooner because of that stress. So the idea being that we have to live this life and live the life as we should. Taking that as a spiritual wajibah, one of the things that we're making sure we're doing, living a life which is healthy. Now one point that I wanted to address. The point that I want to address is this, brothers and sisters. We're also living in a society where there's basically worship of the physical body. People are so concerned about their appearance that that's even more important than the personality. Sometimes you'll find people, men and women, who have a poor self-image because of how they look. So one side, if you hear exercise, we should be exercising. People love to hear that. For some people, no, they don't feel good about themselves because they don't have that ideal body or that ideal looks. This is another extreme. And what I want to mention is the idea that brothers and sisters, when we look at the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, they came in different shapes and sizes. It's not that there's one shape that we should all have, one color that we should all have. And if we don't, that's the colonial mentality. Some of the imams, I'm going to give you some examples, and I might not mention names because I don't want to get in trouble with the brothers also. Some of the imams were thinner. Like, for instance, Imam Sajjad. Some of the imams were fairer. Like, for instance, Imam al-Hasan, Imam al-Hussein. Some of the imams were browner, like Imam Ali. Some of the imams were very dark, like Imam al-Jawad. Some of Ahlul Bayt were tall, like Abbas. And some of the Ahlul Bayt, like Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, were actually, we learn from Hadith, big bone. We come in different shapes and sizes. It doesn't mean any of them were unattractive, but we come in different shapes and sizes. Should I hate myself or feel bad about myself because of the shape that God gave me? Absolutely not. Does that mean, though, I have an excuse not to lead a physical lifestyle? Absolutely not. That same imam, so I'll give you the hadith. The person telling the story, he says, and Shahid Mutahari relates this story. He says the imam was over there, he was working in the field, and the imam was heavy set, he was a bigger guy, he was sweating. The guy describes him, وَكَانَ رَجُلًا بَادِنًا ثَقِيلًا. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was big bone, he was heavy, he was... So, the imam is over there, his imam is sweating. Does that mean the imam wasn't physically fit? Absolutely not. No, the imam took care of himself, spiritual wajibat. One example, this story that I'm about to relate to you is from the sixth imam. He says, and this is now in the time, because remember, our imam, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, he was leading our group in the time of some of the tawaghit, and one of the most ruthless of the tawaghit, which was Hisham ibn Abdul Malik. So Hisham ibn Abdul Malik comes and he's making hajj. He's a young khalifa, ruthless, dangerous. A young khalifa, my father, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, is well known. People know him, and we've been over there, and we've been trying to wrest power away from these tawaghi, bring it back to Ahlul Bayt. The imam, the sixth imam, made a statement in Hajj. I'll quote the words of the imam. He says that, the imam is speaking. He says, Alhamdulillah alladhi ba'atha Muhammadan bilhaqqi nabiyya wa akramana bih. He goes over and he explains. Let me just tell you, summarize what he says. So I was over there, we're making Hajj. We're the opposition. We're against the Tawhut. I make a statement and I go over and I say that Allah, all praise is due to Allah who's blessed us with the Prophet. He's honored us through him. We're God's chosen creation. And then I make a statement which actually goes right at the Khalifa. He says, وَمِنَ النَّاسِ some people say, مَنْ يَقُولُ إِنَّهُ يَتَوَلَّانَا. There's some of the people, this is just part of the statement, that some people claim to have wilayah of the Ahlul Bayt, but actually they've accepted the wilayah of our enemies. And the imam continues. This statement got back to Hisham. When it got back to Hisham, the imam says, Hisham didn't do anything to us in Hajj. He went back to Damascus. Once he got to Damascus, he ordered for us to come. When we came to Damascus, 3 days he kept us outside of the city, kept us from coming into his presence. He wants to humiliate us. On the fourth day, he tells us to come into his presence. When we come there, the Khalifa is sitting there arrogantly on his throne, and he has his people, and they're practicing archery. The imam says he wanted to humiliate my father, so then he tells him, Ya Aba Ja'far, I want you to also try and practice archery in front of everybody. The imam says he's thinking my father will miss. My father is not in shape. He's not physically active. He's going to miss the target. He can laugh. He can get revenge in this way. Imam Baqir, first he said, please, I'm a little old for this. Why don't you let me go? He says, no, you must do this. After that, the imam took the bow and arrow. He fired one arrow into the middle of the target. After that, he fires a second arrow on that arrow, splits the arrow. He fires a third arrow on that arrow and splits that arrow. Up until 9 arrows, he does that. Finally, Hisham says, well, that's enough. So the idea of the little baby, well, yes, it's true. Different shapes and sizes, but physical exercise, one of the spiritual wajibat. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.